Door number 8 by Francis Rosenfeld. Door number 4. Shared consciousness. Taylor woke up to a timid knock on the door, followed by a soft fumbling with the door handle. It was Christine, who was trying to balance a large box of jelly donuts and 2 cups of coffee. She entered, sheepishly, waiting for Taylor's reaction. "Peace offering?" she said, from behind the donut box. "What gives?" Taylor asked, more curious than upset. "I am so sorry, Taylor. I realized yesterday afternoon it wasn't you, it was that girl, Jessica. I told you she's following Matt and his friend around like a shadow. Turns out I was wrong about which one of them she was after. Zoe?" She took a comical Tweety Bird pose to lighten the mood. "Exactly how nuts are you? And how can you mistake me for Jessica?" "What do you mean?" Christine said innocently. "Well, for one, she's a foot taller," Taylor pointed out. "I just saw them from a distance," Christine explained. "She's blonde, like, really Nordic," Taylor pointed at her own skin and hair. "People make mistakes," Christine looked down. "Friends?" she asked. "Sure," her friend shrugged off the logical inconsistencies. In light of her recent experiences, this was the last thing she wanted to get hung up about. "What's that smell?" Christine frowned about the acrid smell of the bug spray. "Oh, God, I'm so late, where is my assignment folder?" Taylor ran in circles around the room, trying to find her homework and textbooks, while cleaning up at the same time, since she couldn't tolerate things out of place. She eventually found the folder, showered and got dressed, while Christine waited for her, sampling the coffee and donuts, just to make sure they were fine. They were. "Have some." She nudged her friend, who took a donut and her coffee to go, planning to eat and drink them on the way to school. When they passed by door number 8 in the hallway, Taylor noticed the number was hanging sideways again, and instinctively straightened it. "Are you fixing somebody else's door number?" Christine asked, appalled. "Sorry, I couldn't help myself. That number is a major source of stress for me. I can't understand why nobody cares enough to fix it," Taylor mumbled excitedly with food in her mouth to a puzzled Christine who couldn't understand her problem. "Freshman year is stressful, I'm going crazy right now with all the assignments too, there is just too much to do." Christine stopped talking for a second and tried to catch up with Taylor, who was charging ahead. "You know what I was thinking? There is this new yoga class on campus, we could really use something like that, release some of the tension." Taylor thought, walking very fast to avoid being late for class again, that this wasn't a bad idea at all, going to yoga class with Christine to spend an hour meditating to soothing music, and forget about having to maintain a B+ average, while keeping her alternate realities straight. "I'd love to come, I could use a break. What time is it at?" she asked her friend. 4. Christine replied. A little warning light came on in Taylor's head, but she dismissed it thinking that even in the craziness that her life had become, there was not much of a chance for that particular time of day to be meaningful in any way. "Do I need to bring anything? Matt?" she hesitated. "No, they've got all we need, just wear comfortable clothing." The school day was a whirlwind of activity. At the end of it, Taylor grabbed a quick bite on the way to the yoga studio and rushed inside, still in the grip of the day's hassle. It took her a few minutes to settle down, and then she started worrying about Christine, who wasn't there yet, though it was almost 4. "Oh, please don't do this to me," Taylor thought, totally surrounded by people she had never seen before in her life, and wondering if her friend had bailed out on her. "Well, if everybody is here, I think we can get started," a familiar voice announced. "That can't be," Taylor thought, resigned to her fate, as she looked at the yoga instructor. He scrunched his face a bit to adjust the glasses on the bridge of his nose. "What's he gonna do?" Taylor thought, more curious than alarmed. "Grab me in the middle of yoga class and force me to walk out the door? I see some new faces in the studio today, let's take a moment to welcome them here." He smiled encouragingly and the other students obliged. To her great emotional discomfort, Taylor found herself the center of attention, with at least 10 pairs of eyes staring at her expectantly, like she was supposed to do something. "Please make it stop, I feel like crawling under a rock," she thought, mortified, and then she remembered. "Comfort-free zone, of course. What was I thinking? Tell me about it." I wouldn't worry, though, he does that with all the new people, just to break the ice, a voice inside her head commented. I wish he didn't do that, another voice replied. I feel very tense when people stare at me. Wasn't this class supposed to be for stress relief? I knew those pants were going to make me look fat. I should never have listened to Jenna. She doesn't understand my body. A third voice joined in. Can you please be quiet? I find it difficult to focus with all this noise. A fourth voice interjected, irate. Who the heck is this? A fifth voice joined the chorus, and Taylor was surprised to realize that it was hers. She was sure she didn't have the thought about the pants, but now that the subject had been brought up, her mind got dragged into a series of pros and cons regarding yoga attire, with way too many points of view for the caliber of the subject, series that ended in a who cares what you look like, everybody is meditating with their eyes closed anyway, and a second admonition from voice number 4 about the noise levels. It's official, I lost my mind. Taylor thought, terrified, and a guy from the first row turned around and frowned at her, displeased. That must be voice number 4. Taylor thought, without realizing that she was doubling down on the offending activity. Indeed. A very annoyed voice number 4. The latter retorted silently. Could we all remember what we discussed about respecting personal boundaries? A sixth voice reminded him. Taylor assumed it was the instructors. The raucous jumble of unspoken thoughts intensified instead of dying down to almost unbearable levels. What happened? Taylor asked herself. Nothing. Another voice answered. Somebody is late. Taylor opened her eyes and saw Christine, who tried to sneak in unnoticed and was looking for a spot to settle down with as little noise as possible. Oh, God, Taylor is going to kill me. Is she here yet? Oh, yes, there she is. Christine's voice joined in, still frazzled with embarrassment for being late, and was instantly met by an exasperated sigh. Now that we're all here, let's make an attempt to void our minds of any thought. It would be a lot more comfortable for everyone involved. The instructor pondered, and, in order to provide an example for the class, he made himself at home in an easy pose, and thought of absolutely nothing. That's not possible, Taylor thought in disbelief, because she had never considered the concept of thinking of nothing, and now that she was trying it, she realized how difficult it was. The soup incident returned to the forefront, and she tried to avoid it as best she could, but was unsuccessful, so much so that the guy in the front row, who apparently had had enough, got up and left, irritated. What happened with the soup? Christine commented. Is it you, Taylor? What are you doing in my head? She asked. Actually, nobody is in anybody's head. The instructor broke his mental pause. We're all together up in the field. The field of what? Christine asked, innocently looking up. Shared consciousness, he replied. But for now our goal is to empty our minds and try to focus on our breath. How do you focus on breath? It's an automatic function regulated by the brainstem. Christine put her recent physiology classes to good use. Conscious breathing, Christine. Conscious, Taylor thought, whispered, trying to help her out. You just notice how your breath goes in and out of your body. Somebody else interjected. Why on earth would I want to mess with my breathing? I'm going to start hyperventilating, I just know it. Christine started panicking. That's why I'm doing the counting, you could try and follow that. The instructor suggested. Christine calmed down and her breathing returned to normal. I can't think of nothing. Taylor blurted out against her will. I'm thinking of nothing, that's thinking. We know. The chorus replied, annoyed. At least it's not about soup anymore, thank God. How obsessive are you? Another voice intervened and then stumbled upon Taylor's OCD and retreated, embarrassed. Let's try to refrain from judgment. The yoga instructor called for peace and harmony. We're all here to learn. I'm so hungry. A voice sounded from the back. Great, now I'm hungry too, and I just ate. Another voice replied. 5 more minutes. A third one echoed from the back. Oh, for shame. Can you stop thinking about food for an hour? You should have eaten before you came. Actually, I don't think that is a good idea. You shouldn't have a full stomach before yoga class, should you? The remaining 5 minutes were all spent thinking about food. I don't know about you, but I'm starving. Is yoga supposed to make you ravenous? I can't shake this obsession with soup. I have no idea what that's all about. I don't even like it. Christine chirped cheerfully while they walked together towards the cafeteria. You mean you don't remember? Taylor asked tentatively. Remember what? Christine stared back at her. I just hope they have soup today. Taylor responded, completely out of the blue, faithful to her late obsession. What did you think about the yoga class? Christine asked, just to make conversation, inadvertently sending her friend's mind into a tailspin in the process. Taylor didn't know how to respond. I don't know. Thinking of nothing seems kind of hard. She gave her friend a half answer. Yeah, I heard they try to do that. Taylor, I'm sorry about being late. I got stuck on a report and wanted to finish it before class. Say, did the teacher give you guys any instructions before I got in? I tried to follow up on what everybody else was doing, but you were all so quiet. It felt kind of creepy actually. So, you think you'll be coming back? She said, still excited about the new activity, and then continued without waiting for an answer. I think I'll stick with it, if nothing else to get some peace and quiet. It's so refreshing to be in a room with 15 people who are able to just sit silently for an hour. Congratulations, he said. Four doors down, three more to go. But Taylor said confused, I don't remember going through the fourth door. They were sitting in their respective chairs in room number 8, and for once Taylor skipped over the familiar and automatic thought process that instantly evaluates you in comparison with another person, and mulls judgments about whose chair is better, and the probable reasons why that occurred. I'm sorry, the term I used for describing the passageways was probably not the most appropriate. You are expecting all the transitions to happen as you pass through actual doors, but as I mentioned previously, they can be anything that connects two otherwise disjoint states. In our case, meditation facilitated the transition from your brain's beta state, the one you normally experience, to the theta state, the brainwave frequency that connects the conscious part of your mind with the subconscious one, where your feelings, emotions, inspiration, and inner knowing dwell. Can you give me other examples of such passageways? Do you mean to tell me that I actually heard those people's thoughts? She gasped, incredulous. Exhausting, isn't it? He yawned. Well, two things you should learn from that, and for the sake of efficiency, I'll just tell you them. Inner conversations tend to be mundane and repetitive, and they can inflict real damage through endless iterations, and having them publicly displayed will teach you self-control faster than any other method I know. But how? Taylor blurted. Were you just about to tell me that's impossible? He said with an eye roll. She remembered the previous time she had said that, and the time before that, and reconsidered. I'm not really sure there aren't things that are impossible, but this is not one of them. We're all particles and frequencies, my dear. It's just a matter of proper tuning, that's all. Your body is another tool, an instrument, nothing more. But why doesn't Christine remember? She would have told me, I'm pretty sure of that. It takes a lot of practice to refine the brain frequency to the range that would carry your actual thoughts. Most people are only aware on some unconscious level of the feelings, emotions, and autonomous responses associated with them. Like my obsession with soup, she reflected. Yep. That's awful. She hates soup. Which brings us to the next lesson. Evaluate your thoughts as they pass through your head. You don't want to be the mental equivalent of a junk bin. You know, the place where you shove whatever you don't want to see laying around and forget about it 2 seconds later? Years pass before you clean it up, and when you finally get to it, you are flabbergasted by all the useless crap you have squirreled away. But nobody can control what goes through their head, she protested. Of course they can. It's called mental discipline, and like anything else, it's an acquired habit. You know, this argument is very interesting coming from you, who can't tolerate a pencil to be placed on the table at an odd angle. I hope one day you manage to find a permanent solution for fixing my door number. I didn't mean, she blushed, instantly embarrassed. Of course you didn't. The same way you don't mean to think of things you wouldn't say out loud. It takes some time, but it can be learned. Anything can be learned, remember that. So, back to my question. What other passageways can you think of? Sunset. Very good. Keep going. Falling asleep. He nodded in agreement. Ashore. Great. The transition between a solid and a liquid space. Can you think of more of these? Liquid to gas? Fog. Solid to gas? Sublimation? That's one way to put it. Burning. Sky to earth? Falling, she realized. Keep going. What about plasma? Plasma is a bit of a tall order. He smiled. Let's stick to non-flesh melting states for now. More. I don't know, walking? Excellent. So, what you are telling me is that at any point in time, while being engaged in the most common of activities, I could inadvertently walk through a door and find myself in another state of being? She asked in a panic. Of course you could, and you do, all the time. What do you think generates the outcomes of our choices? We travel between alternate possibilities for our lives from birth to death. Your reality, as you like to call it, is not one reality at all, but a constant meandering through all the experiences that could have been. The fact that we are blissfully unaware of that doesn't change the matter in the least. All that could have been is woven together a lot tighter than you imagine. And yes, there was no soup in any of the possible versions of yesterday, not because the universe decided to punish you, even in death, but because there are convergences of events that are more or less consistent throughout realities, and bind them together. They are nodes, hubs, if you will. Strange as you may think it is, the soup shortage was part of one. Existence doesn't care about our need to assign more importance to an event than to another. In the larger scheme of things, they're all just events. So, hypothetically speaking, when the door to my room appears, it is possible that it doesn't lead to my room? All the possible rooms are your room. Now, can you please settle down and stop thinking? You are making me anxious. Just sit and listen to your heart. I'm not speaking metaphorically. Listen to your heartbeat. But I can't. Just listen. She sat in silence and for a while heard nothing, and then the rhythmic swoosh of her heartbeat reached her eardrums with the soft sounds of waves lapping on the beach, and she listened to it without thinking for a while, until she was startled from her dreamlike state by the realization that she could in fact hear two hearts beating, not one, and she listened to the two heartbeats and the pauses between them, until there were no more pauses, just two heart rhythms perfectly synchronized, and then she started hearing more heartbeats, one by one, slowly adjusting their rhythms until they beat in unison, until they all merged into a single sound, the composite heart of humanity beating inside her chest. She gulped really hard, hugging the chintz pillow that was mercifully allowed her, and tried to gather all the scattered pieces of being that apparently had been sleepwalking through versions of reality up until this time. She thought how lucky Christine was to be able to go to classes, and dates, and social gatherings, without the fear of getting lost in the maze of possibilities, and taking a wrong turn at the least convenient moment. Made living a lot easier. Of course it does, if you don't mind actually taking that wrong turn. Sleepwalking is intrinsically fraught with danger. But you can't think through all the possible things that can happen. You sure can't think through quite a few of them. You'd be surprised how much your life improves in the absence of the mistakes you are able to anticipate. Since the class had ended and the door had appeared, Taylor tried to put the unsettling conversation behind her and walk through the doorway, secure in the knowledge that she was going back to her room. 5 minutes later, Christine showed up with plans for the evening. You know, I was thinking, since Matt and I are back together and you and I are best friends and he and your neighbor are best friends, wouldn't it be a great idea to go on a double date this evening? You know, relax, hang out, spend some time together, no big deal. But we were not dating. Taylor mumbled, confused. I'm sorry, I didn't realize. Christine hesitated, still incredulous. She decided to keep out of it, but curiosity got the better of her. So, then, why are you guys spending so much time together? We are working on a project. Taylor grabbed the first option that sounded believable. Really? What project? It's some sort of survey for the university. We were helping chart the campus pathways to improve wayfinding. You know, alleys, corridors, vertical circulation, that sort of thing. Taylor explained. Christine stifled a gargantuan yawn. That sounds exciting. Well, then. Maybe some other time. She rushed out the door, eager to meet with her boyfriend. After Christine left, Taylor started thinking that this is what she should be doing at her age. This was what normal people did: get a boyfriend, go out with friends, grab a beer, not contemplate the multi-layered versions of existence to God knows what end. She checked her phone to see if her mother had left her any messages, and as expected the latter did not, and then she got restless in her room and decided to go out and socialize, but she didn't really know any of her other classmates well enough to call. This is what happens when you don't make having a personal life a priority, Taylor admonished herself and devised a plan that starting the very next day, she was going to actively pursue social activities and, under the right circumstances, find a boyfriend. And that, she did. The next day after class she went clothes shopping where she ran into a classmate who invited her to the party she was having that afternoon. Taylor accepted and headed back to the dorm, pleased with her spirit of initiative and eager to try on the new top she had bought. It wasn't the kind of blouse she would normally pick, but since she was on a roll with respect to being more open to new things, she figured a new wardrobe for her new self was definitely in order. See? She told herself as she turned the corner of her street with a pep in her step. If you welcome things into your life, they will show up. All you need is a friendly demeanor and a positive attitude. People like people who like themselves. She thought, and the thought felt weird, fake, like it came from someone else's mind. I'm spending way too much time in room number 8. She blamed herself. What kind of nut questions whose thoughts go through her head? She heard the clock strike 4 and flinched against her will, mad at herself for even thinking it, especially now, when she had decided to start a new life filled with social activities, romance, and cultural interests. So, she heard a familiar voice behind her, so close it felt as if it was speaking from the back of her own head. You decided to meet new people, attend social events, act convivial. He smiled. Nothing wrong with that. Oh, please, God, this can't be real. Why can't I have a normal life, just like everybody else? She fumed inside her head. How is this not normal? He asked, indifferent. As a matter of fact, I've been invited to that kegger too. I'm surprised you're going. Those people don't seem like your kind of crowd. Who made you my babysitter? Taylor thought, but said nothing. Maybe I can't have a normal life. She pondered philosophically. Some people never marry, others never find their vocation, maybe normal is like that too, some people just aren't meant to have it. She asked out loud. Who told you about the party? Your friend, Christine, actually. You know she's dating Matt, right? Or at least she was, as of yesterday. I'm going to kill her. Taylor got instantly furious at Christine and her matchmaking obsession. Of all the guys on campus, she just had to set me up with the one who skips a century when he crosses the street. She seems nice. He smiled, I'm sure she meant well. That's just the problem, everybody means well when they make decisions for others without asking their hapless victims, Taylor thought. I wouldn't worry about it, I had to come even if she didn't invite me. University policy. Don't tell me I'm going to La La Land instead of the party that I was looking forward to. She protested, real loud, and several passers-by stared at the argument, wondering if they should intervene. Do you remember when the wayfinding class starts? 4. She looked around in a panic, concerned that she had left reality behind already. Did we just go through another door? I sure hope so. He said, looking around unsure. I can't tell yet. But what about the party? She protested, really disappointed. It's not that kind of door. He reassured her as they entered the dorm. I'll see you there. Taylor found Christine in her room, all giggles and grins and really pleased with herself. The latter couldn't stop talking and making plans for, you know, later on when she, Taylor and Matt managed to get better acquainted, she laughed at her friend's sorry excuse about the campus wayfinding survey, and then, because Taylor didn't contribute much in the way of response, she got to her own interests and pursuits, and talked about Matt, while her friend dressed up for the party. So, how do you know these people? Taylor remembered the comment she'd heard earlier on. They're Matt's friends, Christine explained. Of course they are. Taylor thought, a little annoyed by the sudden glut of Matt's interests and social activities that was interfering with her life. That means I won't know anybody there. Her newfound enthusiasm for human connection faltered, and she suddenly realized she would rather stay home and reorganize her linen closet by color and thread count, but Christine looked so excited about showing off her boyfriend that Taylor didn't want to disappoint her. I won't spoil the surprise, but you would never guess who else is going to be there, Christine couldn't help herself, beaming from ear to ear, and then, when she encountered the lack of enthusiasm in Taylor's eyes, she decided to let it all out. A certain next-door neighbor that you're spending way too much time with. You know, if you guys want to keep it quiet, that's fine with me, I won't make a big deal out of it. Christine, we're not dating, he's some sort of student advisor. Taylor made one last attempt to explain herself. Campus wayfinding survey, right, you told me. Christine winked all knowingly, in an assured tone which clarified that no explanation in the world would change her conviction. Taylor gave up. The party was at one of the large and heavily decorated wedding cake-style sorority houses that mark the top of a gentle hill like bunches of colorful garlands. By the time they got there, it was already dark outside, and all the lights in the house were on and the windows open, and through them the two could see a large number of people. Taylor easily confirmed that she didn't know any of them. This is going to be so awkward, she mumbled, not realizing that Christine could hear her. Awkward is not the way I'd put it, the latter replied in a very sharp tone, clearly not justified by anything her friend had said or done. Taylor lifted her eyes to find herself almost face to face with Jessica, who didn't seem to recognize her. In all fairness, other than her excursions into alternate realities, the two of them were barely acquainted and only saw each other in class every other week. What is she doing here? Christine cringed. It's a big party, I'm sure that doesn't mean anything. Taylor tried to appease her, but her friend's mood seemed to have been ruined for the evening, and she was already looking for an excuse to leave the party early. Taylor begrudgingly remembered that she may already not be in the real world, and the simple fact she couldn't even tell for sure whether it was so, was worse than suddenly finding herself on a different continent. Everything looked so normal, she hoped that maybe she didn't go anywhere after all, but either way the evening already promised to be uncomfortable, and she thought she should thank Jessica for giving her an excuse to get out of there early. Unfortunately for her, Matt showed up, making Christine suddenly forget her discontent, and she dragged her friend inside the house with renewed enthusiasm. The place was packed and steamy, and all the lights were on, and the roar of the conversations overlapping the loud music, the laughter and the clinking of bottles and glasses, made Taylor a little dizzy. There didn't seem to be a ban on smoking indoors, and the combined cigarette puffs accumulated into strands of wispy fog that got pulled in the air currents and billowed eerily out of the open doors and windows. What are you having? Matt yelled in her ear, trying to compete with the deafening sounds of a guitar riff that burst unexpectedly from an amp behind them. I don't know, lemon seltzer? Taylor suggested. Beer it is, Matt declared, and made his way to the kitchen to fetch one. Taylor took the opportunity to scan the room for her guide, and finally saw him next to one of the windows, having a very animated conversation with a group of guys. He looked so normal and at ease among them that Taylor questioned her own sanity for a second, wondering if she didn't hallucinate her trip to the 70s, even as the last remnants of her brush with frostbite were still healing on her feet. You know what you need? Taylor told herself. Some sort of proof whether this is real or imagined, there has got to be a way to know for sure. Real? She heard the familiar voice behind her. What is that? How did you get here so fast? She wanted to ask, but was interrupted halfway through the thought by the return of Matt bearing a beer bottle. The noise in the room amplified, making the surroundings feel almost surreal. Christine was engaged in an animated conversation with Matt and her neighbor, going over the circumstances that allowed the two to meet, and ending up with way too many details about sport teams. Well, so much for my attempt to have a richer social life. I came to a 100-person party to spend the evening with my best friend, whose boyfriend I barely know, and the guardian of the 4 o'clock hour who will show up no matter what. I could have done this at my dorm and saved myself the half-hour walk up the hill and the damage to my eardrums. Didn't you say you wanted to be more sociable? Why are you propping up the walls? Go, mingle, get some snacks, it's not good to drink on an empty stomach, her neighbor said. Taylor took a plate and carefully perused the bags of snacks to figure out which, if any, did not contain animal products. She had become a vegetarian at the age of 14, and since then she had followed a simple, healthful diet of grains, nuts, berries, and vegetables. She couldn't understand why anybody would choose to abuse their bodies with highly processed starches, fats, alcohol, cigarettes, and other unhealthy items, an exhaustive list from which the donuts were conveniently exempt. She put a few chips on the plate and was trying to figure out how to lose the second half of her beer, since the first one was already making her sweaty and clumsy, but she didn't seem to be able to find the kitchen, which by any rational standards should have been there, on the first floor, right next to the living room. Maybe they converted it for some other function, she thought unconvinced, instantly regretting the first half of her beer and sweating profusely. The combined heat and breathing of so many people had risen the temperature of the room to almost intolerable levels, and even with the doors and windows wide open the atmosphere was stifling, so Taylor got out on the porch to watch the lights of the city tremble in the humid night air.